This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. The case around Britney Spears continues to make headlines, especially after news broke weeks ago that she is free from her nearly 14-year-long conservatorship. It sparked a lot of conversations around how that system, referred to as guardianships in Indiana, actually works. And people working to reform the system in Indiana say it remains broken in ways that need to be changed. With us now, we have Carter Barrett, a health reporter who recently published a feature story on guardianships for Side Effects Public Media. Welcome to the program, Carter.
Hi, thanks. Happy to be here.
Why was it important to report on this topic right now?
So, I mean, my interest, I guess, was piqued for obvious reasons, which was the Britney Spears case, which made me really wonder, like, what's going on in Indiana at the moment? And I really think, on general, this is an underreported topic. Yeah.
Well, can you explain what a guardianship is for those who may have never heard of one before?
Yeah, sure. So people might be more familiar with the phrase conservatorship, which is used in other states and is used in California, so when people are talking about Britney Spears, it was often conservatorship. So people might be more aware of that term, but guardianship cases usually involve like the elderly, people with disabilities, people recovering from an injury or medical condition, or people with severe mental illness. The legal phrase is that this person needs to be deemed incapacitated in court, which basically means they're unable to make responsible choices for themselves, which is kind of a vague concept. So someone who is interested in being someone's guardian would file a petition in court, and it's up to a judge to determine if the guardianship is warranted or necessary. And if the judge agrees that the guardianship makes sense, the guardian then would have full legal control over that person's finances, decision-making, and health choices.
One of the subjects of your story is a man named Nick Klaus, who lives in Huntington, Indiana. We have a soundbite of Nick from when he testified to Congress earlier this year. Let's take a listen.
In December 2016, I became a father, but in many ways, my parents still treated me like a child. I had no control over my paychecks I earned and had to get permission from my stepfather to buy diapers and formula for my daughter. I could make medical appointments for my daughter, but I was not allowed to make them for myself.
What happened to Nick? What was his story? How did he get placed into his guardianship?
Yeah, so in his senior year of high school, Nick was in a really bad car accident and he suffered a traumatic brain injury. He says his mom and stepdad placed him into a guardianship to protect him from being taken advantage of in the aftermath. And at 18 years old, he wasn't really aware of like how restrictive guardianship can be. He consented to the guardianship without even going to court. But as his brain injury improved, he wanted to end the guardianship. I mean, he's like a skilled worker. He has a wife and daughter, but he told me his mom and stepdad fought him through the entire process. So Nick was in this arrangement for 10 years, and his case really highlights how difficult it is for a guardianship to be terminated once it's started.
That's interesting, just thinking that, I would assume once you are better able to take care of yourself, you could get out of a guardianship. What is Nick's situation right now?
Yeah, so his guardianship was just terminated a few months ago. And he told me he's really happy to live a normal life with his wife and daughter. And he works as a forklift operator in northern Indiana. And he recently testified on the Senate Judiciary Committee about toxic conservatorships.
And that committee, was that formed, I'm curious, was that after the stuff came out about Britney Spears, or was this before?
No, yes, exactly. Some lawmakers convened to hear more from a lot of like really expert lawyers, like people from the ACLU, about this topic after it came to light with Britney Spears.
Do we know how common this kind of story is, where someone's placed in a guardianship, maybe initially agreeing to it, or I don't know if it's against their will initially, they can't get out of it? Are there a lot of people like Nick?
So, I mean, the answer is like, we don't really know. Data around this topic is really, really sparse. So in Indiana, there are about 11,000 adults in a guardianship, but nationally, there's not even a great figure on how many people are in these legal arrangements. So part of the answer is we don't know. And there's definitely, So there's definitely not data on like people's conditions or decision-making ability or condition documented on any kind of large scale way. So we're just really not sure. But Justin Schrock, an attorney with Indiana Disability Rights that I spoke to for this story, who will be on later in this program, says he hears stories like Nick's pretty often. But he said what makes Nick's story a little more unique is that he had more financial resources than most of his clients typically do. But he emphasized to me that people with disabilities are often very, very capable of making their own decisions with maybe just a little assistance.
If you're listening and have any questions or comments, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Carter Barrett, health reporter with Side Effects Public Media, about her feature story on guardianships. Carter, when we talk about what happened to Nick, have there been any changes made that would help folks like him? I know Indiana made a change involving guardianships in 2019. Can you explain what happened there?
Yeah, so in 2019, like, Indiana was among the first states to pass a law called putting something called supported decision making into our code. And this is like really a burgeoning movement within the disability rights circles. So the Indiana law would require that judges would consider the quote unquote least restrictive means possible. And one of the new options, which is called supported decision making, is basically an agreement where the adult, maybe they have disabilities, maybe they're an elderly person, would consult a support team like friends, family, social workers, or even like paid support members about the big decisions in their lives. But unlike in a guardianship, the individual like makes the final decision. And experts I talked to made the point, like, when we're making a big decision in our lives, we often consult with important people. And people with disabilities deserve to maintain that decision-making right. And even if the final decision isn't something like we would agree with or their support members would agree with, they have the right to risk or to be wrong or to make decisions. So this new law, like I said, requires judges consider this least restrictive means possible when a guardianship petition is filed.
Is it clear what impact this new alternative has had in the state? Has it been used?
Yeah, I mean, it's just really unclear. Once again, you know, the state doesn't track this because some of these arrangements happen outside the courtroom. But from people I spoke with for this story, it hasn't seemed to make a huge impact yet. Part of this was blamed on the pandemic, which just really slowed getting county judges on board with the new law. And, you know, judges are required to document in their paperwork if they consider the least restrictive alternative. But Justin Schrock says he frequently sees guardianship cases filed without this.
One thing that struck me from the soundbite earlier in Nick's situation was that he was unable to make appointments for himself, but he could make them for his daughter. So I think what's interesting, I mean, I don't know if you were able to find anything on this, is just if you're in a guardianship, you can make decisions for other people in your life, but you can't make decisions for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of a weird caveat of this situation. And once again, we don't know how common that is. But it really, from what Nick has testified to and told me about, really even the smallest decisions were analyzed, you know, buying donuts at the store or, I mean, stuff, putting gas in his car. I mean, just really, really stuff that we would never think to ever get approval from somebody else to do.
You also wrote about a woman named Jamie Beck. Why is Jamie's story significant?
Yeah, so she was the first person in the state to transition from a legal guardianship into a supported decision-making agreement as part of a pilot program before the new law was passed in 2019. And Jamie has like a mild intellectual and developmental disability and was placed in a guardianship when she was 19 when her parents passed away. One expert I spoke to who's familiar with Jamie's story is that she's the kind of case that probably would have languished, and that's the word this expert used, languished on a guardianship. But now she works at a local hospital. She has her own apartment. She said she's really enjoyed the ability to just do stuff that a lot of us take for granted, like, you know, going out of the county without somebody's permission, or, you know, making her own healthcare choices at a doctor's appointment.
Yeah, that word you said, taking for granted. I mean, I think that's something reading the story and hearing their stories of some of these folks, it makes you realize just how lucky you are to be able to just walk out the door when you want to walk out the door.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that really struck me when doing some research for this story, I read this Columbus Dispatch article from 2014, and I think they put it like really, really well, that really anybody can find themselves in this situation. You know, everybody gets older. There's always, you know, God forbid, the potential of a horrible accident. So this is really an issue that affects everybody.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a little bit alarming to think about. Well, are there certain elements of the guardianship system that advocates are most focused on changing right now?
So, yes, there's some interest on the national stage, like I mentioned, the Senate Judiciary Committee, but this is largely a state-by-state issue. And so, like most state-by-state issues, change can be really slow. But in Indiana's upcoming legislative session, you know, some advocates are looking to add a requirement that schools would be legally required to educate parents of children with disabilities about supported decision-making, to try to just expand knowledge about, you know, what this concept even is.
Does it seem like there's been a change in the last few years, especially with regards to the Britney Spears case bringing to light this issue? Does it seem like things are moving along in a more positive way?
You know, and I think it's really hard to tell, once again, because the data is pretty much not there. Mm-hmm. You know, experts I spoke to seem a little hesitant to say that there has been massive changes in this, you know, the conservatorship space.
So it seems like something we will have to definitely keep an eye on, and we'll look forward to more of your reports. Carter Barrett is a health reporter for Side Effects Public Media. You can find her work and more health coverage at sideeffectspublicmedia.org. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about the guardianship system in Indiana and efforts to help people regain their independence. I'm Miriam Soeb. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. Today, we're talking about efforts to reform the guardianship system in Indiana and what's causing problems within the system we've got right now. We're joined by Justin Schrock, staff attorney at Indiana Disability Rights. Welcome to the program, Justin.
Good afternoon, Miriam. Thanks for having me on today.
Before we get into the details, how would you characterize the guardianship system in Indiana right now?
Well, that's a bit of a loaded question. Overall, I have to say it's not really positive as far as the protections of rights of folks who are at risk of or under guardianship. There's far too often in cases, guardianship is really looked at as the first option for an individual with a disability who might need some kind of decision-making supports, when it really should be the option of absolute last resort because of the very fundamental and basic civil rights and liberty interests that are at stake.
So would it be fair to say that the system is not working well right now?
I think that would be very fair to say, yes.
What have you seen in your time working in this area? Has the system gotten better or worse over the years? I think for a lot of us, that the Britney Spears case highlighted this on a much bigger level. Did that push any changes at all?
I think the Britney Spears case, if nothing else, did substantially improve public awareness of what guardianship is. And I think it's important to keep in context, not just guardianship, but kind of where as a country we've come in the past, say, 50 years when it comes to the treatment of people with disabilities. It wasn't long ago when folks with disabilities didn't have the right to live in their own community, didn't have the right to attend school with their peers. So although there is certainly still a lot of improvements that we need to make, things have come a long way. I would say in the time that I've been at Indiana Disability Rights, and I've been with them since the summer of 2015, things have improved slightly. The supported decision-making bill that passed and went into effect in 2019 has been beneficial to some degree. I would agree with Carter's characterization that she mentioned. I don't think we can say that it's substantially improved things, but I think it has helped slightly move the needle in the right direction. So there is some progress being made, but it is very slow going.
Is this perhaps something that will take a long time to see any changes, just because, I don't know, things in the system sometimes take a while to change? Or I guess, like, what would be needed for there to be just like some big overhaul?
So looking at Indiana's guardianship code, the I would say if I had to narrow it down to three things that would substantially improve our guardianship system, one would be a guaranteed right to independent legal counsel if someone requests it who is either already under guardianship or who's someone has alleged that they're in need of guardianship. Right now, there's no right to legal counsel whatsoever. It's incredibly rare for someone who's been alleged to be an incapacitated person or someone under guardianship to have an attorney representing their individual legal interest and what they want. What Indiana uses instead, and I would say is one of about 10 states that rather than guaranteeing some right to independent legal counsel, we instead use what are called guardians ad litem, or GALs. And you might have heard that term before, because GALs are used pretty frequently in other contexts. But those are exclusively in cases involving children. So for example, parental divorce proceedings where custody or parenting time is contested, child in need of service cases, termination of parental rights proceedings, juvenile delinquency proceedings. And in most of those, it's not even the child's legal interests that are primarily at issue. It's the parents. And the role of the GAL, whether in one of these matters that involve children or in adult guardianship cases, is not to advocate for what that individual wants. Their job is to perform some kind of assessment of the situation and then make a report to the court as far as what they believe is in the, quote, best interests of the individual. And a best interest standard is not anything close to what, you know, we would think of, you know, in terms of a regular attorney client relationship, where, you know, if I'm representing someone, I have an obligation to advocate for what my client wants. You know, I can't argue to the court if I disagree with, you know, what my client is asking for and say, you know, Your Honor, my client wants this to happen, but I really think this would be better for them. That's not how it works, but that's really all that in Indiana we've determined that folks who are at risk of or under guardianship are entitled to.
I have to say the one thing that struck me was the fact that folks who are in a guardianship cannot have their own legal counsel, or if they want to get a lawyer, they have to ask permission from the guardians. It just seems like go ahead.
So, and just to kind of make a point of clarification there, and that is for the most part, that is accurate because, you know, folks under guardianship typically have pretty minimal financial resources. And even, you know, say in Nick's case, he had, you know, somewhat substantial financial resources, but no direct control over them. So how is he realistically going to find a private attorney? Now, for Nick's case, he happened to get connected with Indiana Disability Rights. We accepted his case, did some fact finding and offered to represent him, but we didn't necessarily need to get permission from his parents to represent him. So that's just a small point of clarification, but by and large, it is accurate to say that someone under guardianship has really no realistic means to find their own legal counsel unless somehow they're able to find someone who's willing to represent them for free.
Right. I'm guessing that's really hard to find for cases like this.
Yeah, there are maybe a handful of other attorneys in the state who I know of who do that. There are several folks over at Indiana Legal Services in various offices in the state who I know will handle those cases from time to time. And then there's me. but outside of that, I'm not aware of anyone who regularly handles these sorts of cases.
What has your experience been in handling these cases? When you go to different counties across the state, are things handled differently or is everything pretty much the same under like an Indiana law or something?
So there is a pretty widely recognized discrepancy in how guardianships are carried out in more populous counties versus more rural counties. And that has to do, it's for two reasons, really. One is that more populous counties like Marion, Allen, Lake tend to have dedicated probate courts. So those judges only hear, matters regarding estates, you know, matters relating to trust and guardianship cases all day, every day. So those judges know the law very well when it comes to guardianship. So although, you know, there are very minimal due process protections in Indiana's guardianship code, at least those judges are, for the most part, ensuring that those laws are followed. Now, when you look at rural counties where judges might hear guardianship cases, they might hear criminal matters, divorces, you know, just a wide range of cases before them. And, you know, judges are humans. They can't be experts on, you know, every area of law. And when it comes down to it, they're making, you know, judgments based on the laws and arguments put before them. So circling back around to the lack of a right to independent legal counsel, you know, in a lot of cases, if, say, someone is petitioning for guardianship over another individual and either the individual or their attorney just blatantly disregards the law, if there's no one to speak up and bring that to the judge's attention, then, you know, a lot of times that just gets missed. So I not infrequently have seen guardianships that are established without a hearing. Sometimes the day after a petition is filed, often with maybe no or very minimal evidence that goes along with it. There's also, I would say in rural counties, I see a lot of misuse of consents to guardianships. Our code, I'm not sure why, but our guardianship code does allow someone going through a guardianship proceeding or already under guardianship to waive their rights to notice of proceedings regarding the guardianship and to attendance at hearings, and also to indicate their consent to a guardianship. However, the state laws that apply to those explicitly state those waivers or consents have to be provided, quote, knowingly and voluntarily. So what I see on a semi-regular basis in particularly rural counties is there'll be a petition for guardianship filed. Maybe there's a very short physician statement of some sort that's submitted along with it. And then the guardian's attorney will have the individual who the guardianship is being sought over sign a form saying they waive these rights and consent to the guardianship. And then it's filed. And sometimes these judges are reviewing that and then just approving the guardianship without ever having even laid eyes on the individual or hearing any evidence beyond that. It's just a miscarriage of justice, if you will.
We have a comment from Tarina on Facebook who says one of the largest school districts in the state is pushing parents to seek guardianship for their children with intellectual disabilities as soon as they turn 18 and planting fear in the parents. It's unfortunate that the right to try supported decision making first is being ignored. Is it common that schools in Indiana push parents to seek guardianship, and why would they do that?
Well, to answer the first question, yes, it is common. There's school to guardianship pipeline that is often referenced. And that is that's getting better very slowly. More special education coordinators and teachers are learning about supported decision making and other less restrictive alternatives to guardianship. But in a lot of communities, that's not the case. Now, as far as why that happens, it's tough to say. I think many times it could be a lack of awareness of those options. It could be, you know, kind of those longstanding societal biases against folks with disabilities and this idea that people with disabilities, you know, need protection from some theoretical harm rather than respect for their individual rights. And what's ironic about there being a school to guardianship pipeline in Indiana specifically is that Article 7, our you know, set of regulations that lay out our guardianship laws, and then or not guardianship, our special education laws in Indiana, it provides the option to or for a student once they turn 18 to appoint what's called an educational representative, where they can, it's almost like a power of attorney, where they can appoint typically their parent to be able to continue to help them make decisions regarding their special education services. And the applicable regulation actually also provides an option for the appointment of an educational representative even if the student isn't believed to possess the capacity to make that appointment. So really there's no reason that a guardianship should ever be established in Indiana purely for the purposes of managing a student's special education services. But we do see that being a big precursor to that pretty often.
Well, we have about 2 minutes left here. If someone takes on a guardianship, are they legally responsible for anything that the person in their care does? I mean, is that something that folks should maybe think twice about?
So that's a difficult question to answer because the code isn't entirely clear. There are some circumstances where a guardian might be held liable. But typically, no, they're not going to be.
Okay, because I was just thinking, you know, maybe that would make some folks try another route rather than trying to take control of someone's life.
Right.
Is there anything before we let you go that you think we might see some changes in the near future?
Well, I know. When you talk to Carly after me, she might be talking about some of the kind of tangential or guardianship related matters that might be happening going through the legislature. I don't know about any pending bills that are coming up that would substantially impact the rights of folks under guardianship. But I guess to quickly circle back around to one of your earlier questions, and when I mentioned, and I kind of got sidetracked about the right to independent legal counsel, a couple of other things that I think would significantly improve our guardianship system, in addition to a recognized right to independent legal counsel, would be an established right for individuals under guardianship to periodically request review hearings for the continued necessity of the guardianship. There's currently no requirement for that. And also the establishment of some sort of process where folks under guardianship can submit complaints about their guardians and have those addressed informally.
Thank you so much, Justin Schrock, as a staff attorney at Indiana Disability Rights. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're continuing to discuss the guardianship system in Indiana. And with us now is Carly Shortino-Poulter, Advocacy Network Director at the ARC of Indiana. Carly, the legislative session is coming up here in Indiana. Is there anything specific you're working on involving guardianship or anything else that you're watching?
Absolutely, there are. And thank you so much for having me today, Miriam. You know, in our last segment, Trina brought up the idea that a lot of schools tend to push guardianship. And that's absolutely one of the things that we'll be looking at in this upcoming legislative session, is some legislation to try to interrupt that school to guardianship pipeline, because that is really one of the bigger issues, especially when it comes to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. You know, at the ARC Advocacy Network, you know, we get calls from people all the time. And pretty much on a daily basis, we get parents calling up with questions about guardianship. And those calls almost always start the same way. My son's turning 18 soon and the school says I have to get guardianship. Well, maybe. Let's talk a little bit more about that. And so, you know, and part of the reason that happens in part is just, you know, not recognizing that things have changed. And part of it is people not fully understanding, you know, the full implications of guardianship and what guardianship truly means. Because most people, when they think about guardianship, you know, they assume that it's just a way for mom and dad to stay involved and still be able to talk to people. But guardianship is a whole lot more involved than that. And that's actually one of the big things that the Britney Spears case has highlighted, especially for the general public, is just how extensive and how invasive guardianship can be. And so, you know, we're having more people pay attention to that. And, you know, one of the things as well is that Indiana's Article 7, which is Indiana's special education laws, while they do allow for an educational representative, throughout the code in Article 7, it constantly refers to guardians. And so a lot of educators assume that that means that you have to have a guardian. And so a lot of it is simply working off of old information, not recognizing that things have changed, and also not recognizing that there are alternatives to guardianship that not only are available, but in many cases are far more appropriate.
It seems like there's a lot of missing information or miscommunication. What is it that leads to this when there are other opportunities or options for families that the schools aren't, I guess, including when they talk to parents?
Oh, absolutely. And part of it is, you know, in fairness, there are so many things that teachers have to know. And this isn't one of those things that typically they have to know. And there's a lot of nuance to, you know, different levels of support beyond just guardianship. And so one of the things, you know, that we see is that, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily recognize different options, or they've maybe heard of other options like things like power of attorney or things along those lines, but they don't think about it in terms of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. You know, power of attorney is very common among the military. and with older adults, but they don't necessarily think about that for an 18-year-old. So that's a big part of it. And also one of the things that I have seen change over the years is that, you know, this younger generation of families are not only more open to alternatives to guardianship once they hear about them, but many times, again, because they don't really understand what guardianship truly means, what the full implications of guardianship are. You know, as soon as they hear that, you know, guardianship is not what they want. They still want their children or their loved ones to be as independent as possible or to have as many opportunities as possible. And unfortunately, guardianship is one of those things that interferes with that. And so one of the things we see is that once families actually understand what guardianship truly means, they're often eager to find out alternatives.
If you have any questions or comments for our show today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Once again, that number is 866-476-3881. Carly, we touched upon supported decision-making a little bit throughout the show. What exactly is it, and how does it relate to the law change here in Indiana in 2019?
Absolutely. So supported decision-making is kind of interesting because on the one hand, supported decision-making can be a formal written legal agreement. But supported decision-making is also something we do. And so I'm going to kind of take a step back and kind of explain both parts of that. And let me start by explaining, you know, when I say supported decision-making is something that we do, supported decision-making is something that we all use in our own lives all the time. You know, the idea of supported decision-making is going to people you know, going to people you trust, going to experts, and gathering information to help you make a decision. So in our own lives, you know, some examples of that could be things like, you know, when your water heater busts and you call out a plumber to figure out what you need to do, that's supported decision making. When you get bad news at the doctor's office and you pick up that phone and you call your best friend or you call your sister or you call your mom to talk through what they said and try to process all of that and figure out what your next steps are, that's supported decision making. You know, when you know, it's holiday time and when you are, you know, doing your holiday shopping and you go onto Amazon and you check the reviews on products, believe it or not, that's supported decision making too, because you're gathering information from other people to help you make your own decision. And that's true for people with disabilities too. And I think a lot of times people assume that, you know, it needs to be guardianship or nothing. You know, they think, oh, well, if I don't have guardianship, then they're all alone. Well, none of us are all alone. You know, we all have those people that we turn to in our lives, and people with disabilities are no different. And so, you know, those are some examples of how we all use supported decision making in our own lives. But of course, when we talk about people with disabilities, things have to have a special name. So that's where supported decision making comes in. But supported decision-making is also now a recognized legal agreement in the state of Indiana. And that's what that legislation in 2019 was all about. It was creating a formal legal document that identifies, you know, people that a person with a disability or an older adult or a person with mental illness can turn to help them make different types of decisions. And so you may have different people you go to, you know, for different things. You know, you may go to Aunt Ann when you're trying to make a medical decision because Aunt Ann is a nurse. And you may go to Randy when you need to make a decision about, you know, government services because he's got that background. And so it's identifying those people that you turn to for different topics. And it identifies what type of support that you want from them. You know, do you want them to help you do research? Do you want them to help you talk things through so that you can process it? You know, how do you want the help and what type of help are you wanting? But it reaffirms that it is the individual's decision to make. And so those formal supported decision-making legal agreements help to reinforce a person's ability to make their own decision. It reaffirms that they can make their own decision. And as a result, it reaffirms equality. And it lets people know that, no, this person may have a disability, but they have all the same rights that anybody else does.
You mentioned that they'll have a list of folks that they can go to for decision making. Mm-hmm. And that kind of answered a question that I was wondering while you were talking about this was, you know, if some folks who would oppose this would say, well, when you give them decision making, they might get advice from somebody that's not a good person that's going to give them the wrong advice. But it looks like there are these supportive measures to make sure that the people they're talking to actually care.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is the individual's right to decide who they want to turn to for advice and for help and support in making their own decisions. But you know what? When I talk to families, you know, invariably, you know, they will kind of very sheepishly say to me, you know, he doesn't make the best decisions. There is not a parent of an 18-year-old on the planet Earth who doesn't feel the exact same way, regardless of disability. And so sometimes, you know, we've got to help, you know, remind people of that reality, is that, you know, people with disabilities are people. First and foremost, they're going to go through a lot of the exact same things that everybody else does. Are they going to make bad decisions? Yep. Guess what? So did I, especially at 18, 19, and 20 years old. But we learn from our mistakes. And that's really one of the biggest differences, is that people without disabilities are allowed to screw up, and they're allowed to make mistakes, and they're allowed to learn from those mistakes, and they're allowed to try again and try again. And oftentimes, people with disabilities aren't given that same respect. You know, if they don't do something perfectly the first time, they're never given the chance to try again. They're constantly reminded that they messed up when they tried. And that can be really humiliating and really dehumanizing. And in all honesty, how many of us at all, you know, do something perfectly the first time? So, you know, those are some of the things that, you know, this is one of those times where we tend to have higher expectations, and in some situations, unrealistic expectations for an older adult or for a person with a disability than we have for the general public. And we need to make those a little more equal, and to make sure that people with disabilities and older adults are able to continue to make their own decisions, even when we don't agree with them. Because I'll be honest, you know, I may make decisions and my mother doesn't always agree with the decisions I make. But you know what? No one questions my ability to make my decisions. And even if she disagrees and she can register her disagreement, she recognizes that I'm an adult and it's still my decision to make.
Well, you work with a lot of people with disabilities and families of people with disabilities. What have you heard from them about supported decision making?
Most of the time, they haven't necessarily heard of supported decision making. Word is starting to get out more and more. And so one of the things that we do when we get those calls from families, or when we go out in the community and we do presentations on guardianship and alternatives, first of all, one of the things I've learned is that if I don't use the word guardianship, families aren't going to come, because they don't know that they need to know this information. And that's a big part of it, is people don't know what they don't know. And so they don't know to ask the questions. And so in many situations, what I'm seeing now is that, you know, once you explain what guardianship really means, most families are like, oh my gosh, I don't want that. And so then we talk through all those different alternatives, and we really focus on the individual's abilities, you know, what are their abilities? You know, what have they learned to do? How can we teach them more of these things? And really kind of guide parents through that process of helping their loved ones or families, and helping their loved ones learn how to make decisions, and recognizing that this is not, you know, an all or nothing thing. Like I said, we all have people that we turn to for help when we need to do things. People with disabilities are no different. So let's create those supports. Let's identify those people, and let's talk to our loved ones about who they can go to talk things through. Let's identify that. Let's make those connections so that they know who the safe people to go to, who the people they can trust are to help them make those decisions.
Do you think there's been a change in the way folks with disabilities are viewed in Indiana or maybe around the country?
I think we're definitely starting to. And one of the reasons for that is simply that there are more people with disabilities. And so more of the general public know people with disabilities. You know, 60, 70 years ago, people with disabilities were sent to institutions. And so you didn't see them in the community. And now, you know, they're not only, you know, we now have 50 years of students with disabilities in the school system. So we've grown up alongside people with disabilities. Disability prevalence rates are increasing. And so now, you know, for example, earlier this week, the CDC announced that the prevalence of autism is now estimated to be one in every 44 children. Well, that's a lot of us. And so now, you know, it's no longer this rare thing. It's now, oh, yeah, my cousin's son has autism. Oh, my nephew's daughter has a disability. So it's affecting our lives more directly. We're seeing it more. And as a result, we're also seeing all the different things that people with disabilities can do. We're also seeing people with disabilities work in the community. They're no longer necessarily in sheltered workshops or segregated from the rest of the community. They're a part of the community now. And so now maybe we work with somebody who has a disability. Maybe when we go grocery shopping, you know, we see a person with a disability who's bagging our groceries and we get to know them. And as a result, it normalizes disabilities. It helps us recognize that, again, people with disabilities are people. And as a result, we're recognizing that they can do more and more and more.
Well, Collier, we have about a minute left. What are changes that you would hope to see around guardianships if you could wave a magic wand and get the changes you wanted?
Well, you know what? If I could wave a magic wand, you know, I would make, you know, guardianship a last resort instead of a first resort. And right now, unfortunately, oftentimes it is, you know, the default. And we need to, you know, we need to flip that script. One of the things that Indiana has recently done as well is we have created a state plan for supported decision making. And really what that plan is focused on is educating different stakeholder groups. And when I say that, I mean, you know, educating judges in the legal community, educating educators, educating the medical community, families, as well as people with disabilities about options and about alternatives, and especially about supported decision making, so that they know the wide range of alternatives that are available to them. Because I think that's really been one of the biggest barriers, is really knowing what options they have, what those actually look like in real life, and then how do you implement them.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Carly Shortino-Poulter is Advocacy Network Director at the ARC of Indiana. Thank you for taking the time today. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.